I'm very happy now to welcome to the Radio Cafe Suki John. She's a dancer, choreographer, writer. She's a professor in the School for Classical and Contemporary Dance at Texas Christian University. And she's author of the new book, Contemporary Dance in Cuba, Técnica Cubana as Revolutionary Movement. She will be at Collected Works Bookstore this Saturday at 4 in the afternoon. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
It's great to have you. There are so many threads of culture and history and spirituality and physical movement that came together to influence the way people dance in Cuba today. We think sort of in a general way of the Spanish and African influences, but it's far more complicated than that. What are some of those many threads that make up Cuban dance?
Well, the Spanish and African, Afro-Cuban threads are extremely important. But you also have a very strong ballet tradition in Cuba that was brought to the fore by Alicia Alonso and her late former husband, Fernando, and also brother-in-law. And she and these two men created the Cuban National Ballet, which now has over 14 schools around the country in all of the provinces. What they have done is brought professional-level ballet training into all of these schools of art, culminating in the National School of Art, La ENA, in Havana. That means that people who study folkloric dance, people who study modern dance, are also getting a very strong ballet background. And anybody who's danced professionally can tell you that that makes for very strong technical dancers. So the Cuban modern technique, which is original to Cuba, was formed after the revolution to really express the Cuban soul through dance. And that is done with a very strong technical base. Then there is the multicultural aspect of Cuba, which includes many elements, and all of these are represented through the dance form.
And those multicultural elements include, for example, influences from other parts of the Caribbean as well.
Yes, there's some French-Haitian influence. There's some flamenco influence. There is influences brought into Cuba early on in the conquest. I speak about a possibility of a native influence in some early Cuban dance forms, Sephardic Jewish influence in some of the Spanish dances that were brought in, Zapateado from Spain, flamenco, Andalusia. There is, as I said, the Haitian, the French-Haitian influence, which is called Tumba Francesa. There is probably more recently some more influence from Brazil and Jamaica as well.
Right, right. Now, if you are, for example, an art historian and you're looking at the influences in a particular style of painting, you look at the material culture of other paintings and drawings and even back to cave paintings or whatever, when you're studying dance and most movement isn't really recorded, you don't have the objects to study. How do you study? How do you pick all this stuff apart?
Well, it's really interesting that you say that, because dance scholarship is a relatively new field when compared to art scholarship, art history, music history, precisely because dance is so ephemeral. So we have some writings by people who traveled through Cuba. The Countess of Merlin, for example, was a Cuban woman who married a French count, and she talked about the Cuban delirium for dancing. There were some other people who were a little bit less enthused by the Cuban dance delirium and spoke of it a lot less positively. They saw it as a more derelict drain on the Cuban psyche and Cuban time. So we know throughout history that there were some people who wrote about dance. We also have certain prohibitions against dance, and things like the Carnival or Three Kings Day, the Epiphany, that were celebrated in dance, and one of the few days of the year that the African slaves were allowed to dance openly in the streets when slavery was still legal in Cuba. So we have certain texts, but they are minimal. Then, of course, we have what's come down through the bodies of dancers, because dancers pass information down from one dancer to the next generation to generation. And we do that in classrooms, in social dance settings, in ritual settings. So it's what we call embodied knowledge. And much of this Cuban dance knowledge has been embodied over the generations by different dancers.
Slavery in Cuba was brutal and repressive, as it was everywhere. And yet, a lot of these African traditions of dance and religion and even language, some of the Yoruba language, survived in a way that, if you compare it, for example, to slavery in the United States, you don't have that same kind of detailed and specific survival. How did that happen?
Well, there are several things. In the United States, in New Mexico in particular, we see a lot of syncretism where there's been a mix of native cultures with Christianity. Where there were Jesuits, there was a little bit more survival of some of the native forms. And the Spanish Catholics, although they were extremely repressive in Cuba, they also allowed for a certain syncretism of Cuban deities into the Spanish saints. So you ended up with, for example, Santa Barbara, Saint Barbara, being syncretized with the Afro-Cuban or the Yoruba deity Chango. Chango is a deity or an orisha. And he and Santa Barbara, even though they're two different genders, become syncretized and they are celebrated on the same day. So the survival of certain African traditions through slavery had to do with the syncretism of the religions. So oftentimes at a function for one of the Catholic saints, you would find that there were Africanisms in the dancing, in the music, but because it was being translated into Catholicism, it was allowed. Now, this didn't happen in the American South, where there is a stronger Protestant history.
Right.
And so much of the dancing was entirely repressed. So some of those African dance traditions were repressed even further on the plantations of the South than they were in the Caribbean. And also, the Yoruba tradition is extremely strong in Cuba because the Yoruba were the last tribe to come in great numbers to Cuba. And so they survived in greater numbers. And their tradition is extremely music and dance heavy. All of their orishas are celebrated in music and dance.
We're talking to Suki John about her book, Contemporary Dance in Cuba. Now, Cuba is a dance culture. Even non-dancers are excellent dancers. I mean, sometimes when I've been there, I thought, you know, you could take anybody off the street and they could open a dancing school in the United States. They don't go to dancing school. What is the context? I mean, you talk about movement and dance being embodied and passed on culturally from one generation to the next. What does that look like in Cuba?
Little kids dancing while somebody's playing a drum or a tin cup. I mean, it sounds like a movie, but it really happens. I was recently at a rehearsal in Matanzas with my son, Rafael, and a little boy, a Cuban boy named Alvaro, and the dancers were on break, and they started riffing with an American dancer who was with me, a North American dancer, and they started making a little rhythm out of their hands and their feet and banging on some cups. And the kids started dancing, and it's everywhere. Music, rhythm, dance are part of the culture all the time. They don't walk around with smartphones. They walk around with rhythm, and you see that. You see that in the way they walk. You see that in the way they interact. People sing all the time. They're not afraid to sing. They dance socially. They dance for ritual purposes. They go to the theater and see dance. So, you know, I mentioned in my book a time that I was hitchhiking in Cuba, which people do all the time, and an engineer picked me up and started deconstructing Alicia Alonso's performance of Giselle. I mean, people know dance in Cuba. It is a dancing culture where dance is loved and respected as an art form.
And I think the thing that's so fascinating about that is that it's participatory. I mean, we have in the United States this kind of, like, you go to the theater and see the Aspen Santa Fe Ballet or whatever, and then you go home. Whereas in Cuba, the scenario that you just described, dancers and musicians and regular people are all part of the dance. Mm-hmm. In ballet, if you're not trained, you better not do it. But all these other kinds of dancing, you can really do. So how do you observe that participation and observer dynamic in Cuba? Because they do have this ballet tradition as well.
There's no such thing as a party in Cuba where people don't dance. Okay? So Cubans have been running low on food and fuel for a long time, since the fall of the Soviet Union. But they always have music and dance when they get together. So you don't have to be a trained dancer. You just have to grow up around there. And there is dancing in pretty much every social situation. I mean, that's very Latino. I mean, it happens across Latino cultures. In Cuba, it's particularly so. So that little kids are learning how to salsa. Their little girls are moving their hips, and they're told, mueve la cintura, move your waist, and it's not considered inappropriate. It's not considered a come on. It is a celebration of having a body that moves and responding to rhythm. So it happens in all sorts of contexts. I can't really think of a corollary in American culture that we do all the time. We eat, they dance. I mean, I don't know.
Right. Now, Cuba and the United States, because of the Cuban Revolution and the embargo and everything, have been essentially cut off from each other for over 50 years. How has Cuba interacted with other countries in terms of cultural exchange and specifically dance?
There's been a lot of cultural exchange with other countries. Cuba and Canada have a very healthy relationship. Cuba and Mexico, Cuba and Spain. In fact, the National Ballet is in residence part of the year in Spain. The former Soviet bloc was very interactive with Cuba. You would have teachers coming from Russia or Hungary, Romania. Although the Cuban dancers, at least the ballet dancers, were not supposed to spend too much time in Russia because Alonso didn't want them to become Russianized in their ballet affectations. She wanted to keep their style really Cuban. Modern dancers that I've worked with have traveled internationally. They've worked in Peru and Mexico and all over South America, in Asia. I met the dance company that I spend the most time with, the Compañía de la Danza Narciso Medina, which is based in Havana. I met them in Finland at a dance festival. So it's almost like it's the United States that's cut off.
Right.
But what it's meant for Cuba, because travel is hard for Cubans who are not of a high artistic level, what it's meant for Cubans is that they've developed their dance aesthetic away from what was happening in the United States. So while we were going deep into postmodernism and props and multimedia, Cuba was really delving into the language of the body. They didn't have a lot of stagecraft available to them, but they had amazing dancers. So the physical aspect of the dance became very developed, while some of the conceptual and stagecraft things that happened in the United States did not really get to Cuba in the same way. Although, because they did have contact with Europe, some of the danse théâtre that was happening in Europe did bleed in to the Cuban aesthetic in modern dance.
Well, and as you write in your book, after the demise of the Soviet Union during this special period, there was so little stuff. There wasn't enough food. There wasn't enough anything. And so they really had to go inward into their bodies and souls.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And it really initiated a flowering of creativity. That creativity couldn't have happened without Técnica Cubana already having been developed by the earlier generation, Ramiro Guerra, and the people who followed him at the National Modern Dance Company. But what happened during the special period after the fall of the Soviet Union was what they call invento cubano. They would invent stuff constantly. Like, they would invent a carburetor because they couldn't get one. You know, they invented a way to entertain the people, because people were desperate for entertainment and art. and to be taken out of the daily struggle.
The title of your book is Contemporary Dance in Cuba, Técnica Cubana as Revolutionary Movement. And there are two things that I want to ask you about. One, first of all, what is Técnica Cubana? What specifically does that mean?
Técnica Cubana is the name given to the contemporary dance technique that was created intentionally in Cuba after the revolution of 1959. And this technique, under the guidance of Ramiro Guerra, who studied in New York with Martha Graham and Merce Cunningham, this technique was made with government support to express the Cuban multicultural society and its love of dance. So that's Técnica Cubana.
So it has in it a lot of African and a lot of Western European ballet modern movement.
Yes, it really has strong tropes that you can see simultaneously. You can have the legs and feet doing a classical demi-plié in first position, the arms in flamenco or Afro-Cuban choreography, and the torso doing something straight out of Yoruba. So you can have, add to that, a modern dance contraction of straight out of Martha Graham technique, and you have a starting movement for Técnica Cubana.
So these must be some of the most versatile dancers in the world.
Yes, they are. That's why I was totally enchanted by them when I first saw them, and I am still, to this day, enchanted by these dancers.
Now, the other part of the title of your book, Técnica Cubana as Revolutionary Movement, it's kind of a play on words. How is dance revolutionary?
Well, I wanted the book to be titled Revolutionary Movement, but that doesn't Google as well as Contemporary Dance in Cuba. So my publisher, McFarland, insisted on the foretitle of Contemporary Dance in Cuba. So I see dance as an intentional tool of the revolutionary process in Cuba. Castro, the Fidel Castro regime, got behind dance in a way that is really surprising to American dancers. I mean, they formed a modern dance company, they backed an existing ballet company, and they formed a folkloric company and took these companies out into the provinces, out into the sugarcane fields, into the cigar factories, and then they toured them abroad. So there was an active decision made to let dance unite the country after the revolution and to bring people into this sense of participation that Cuba is mine and my culture is reflected in Cuba. So not only in the what we think of as a European art form, as ballet, even though Cuban ballet is very Cuban, but the Cuban contemporary dance, which celebrates the Afro-Cuban element, the mixed heritage that is in every step that they do. This was a way for the regime to unite people around culture in Cuba.
I often wonder what the United States would be like if overnight, suddenly everybody began to dance. And here in Cuba, you have this culture where, in fact, just about everybody does dance. I've met a few people who didn't, and there's sort of weird exceptions, I guess you'd say.
Right.
Maybe there's
right.
Some who
Fidel
don't.
Fidel doesn't dance. He's like one of three people on the island who doesn't dance.
Right. But I wonder if you could talk about what it actually does. In other words, how are Cubans different from us as a function of being dancers, being in their bodies, moving as a way of life?
Well, they're in their bodies. I mean, you said it. That might be a weird phrase for people to hear who aren't used to the dance culture. But they're comfortable in their bodies. They're very comfortable in their sensuality. There's very little sense of embarrassment or repression around sexuality, sensuality. People are happy and proud in their bodies, and it doesn't matter the shape that they're in. I mean, there is much less sort of embarrassment about body shape and much more enjoyment of having a working, healthy, functioning body that feels and breathes and enjoys life. I think it's a healthier relation with the body in many ways. And it's not just because of dancing, but it's expressed in dancing. And I think that socially it's also, it's a lubricant. Dance is a much better lubricant than alcohol. It allows people to have a good time and not stagger home. You know, they're interacting and having fun, and it's across the generations also. So I think that there's a sort of a self-acceptance that goes along with that dancing culture, an acceptance of the body. And there's less, they don't spend as much time seated as we do. They walk all the time. They use public transportation. Nobody has a car, or they bike. So physically, there's a lot more activity in general.
Do you think, I mean, you're talking about Técnica Cubana and all these different people dancing and all these conglomerations of dance forms from different cultures and continents, do you think it helps people to just be naturally less, for example, racially prejudiced?
Oh, boy. The race question in Cuba is so different than it is here. It's just, it's similarly complicated, but it's very different. It's a little less opaque. The old generation tends to have more racial prejudice than the younger generation. Dancing is a way that people cross racial lines and have, you know, way back to before Cuba was separate from Spain. I mean, one of the ways that people showed that they were Cuban rather than Spanish was that they would do Cuban dances, and those were the dances that were being done in the Cabildos, the black fraternities. So this sense of Cuba is Afro-Cuba is in the dancing. So, you know, if you look at dance history, you look at elements that really come from African dance. The lateral shift of the hips is part of the transatlantic dance tradition, which means that the way that Cubans dance, moving their hips from side to side, that is an African element that has found its way into dancing in the Caribbean. And just by virtue of dancing that, there's an innate acknowledgement that Cuba is an Afro-Latino country. It embodies, if you will, aspects of African culture in the movement traditions. So,
and whether the person dancing them be black, dark brown, light brown, blonde,
right,
or whatever.
Exactly. Yeah. It's so much. And you know, all the kids know the Orisha songs. And that is definitely since the revolution. Before the revolution, there was much more of a separation between classes as well as colors of people. Now, there is still racism, but it takes such a different form than it does here in the United States. And people talk about race in a totally different way than we do here.
Yeah.
There's so much less of a loaded judgment inherent in it. It's very interesting.
Suki John is a dancer, choreographer, and writer. She's a professor in the School for Classical and Contemporary Dance at Texas Christian University. She's author of the new book, Contemporary Dance in Cuba, Técnica Cubana as Revolutionary Movement. And she will be at Collected Works Bookstore this Saturday at 4 o'clock. I want to thank you so much for spending all this time with us here on the Radio Cafe.
My pleasure.